Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Sandra Barrett, and on behalf of University College of Syracuse University, it's my pleasure to welcome you here today. We're going to be talking about public art, starting with the question, what is public art? But first, I wanted to give you a heads up. Of course, next week is Thanksgiving, so we will be off for a week. Then we come back for 3 weeks in December before we take the long winter break. So you're not going to want to miss those three programs in December, starting out on December 1st with Bob Herz. I don't think he's here. Bob Herz of the Southside Innovation Center and some other entrepreneurs talking about economic development and entrepreneurship, some really interesting stories. You may remember we were at the Southside Innovation Center several years ago when they first opened. December 8th, we're going to be talking an update on stormwater management, some of the interesting things that are going on at the county that have actually contributed to the fact that, as you know, a few weeks ago, the county executive received an award from Governing Magazine. We'll have Matt Millay, deputy county executive. I don't think we've met him before here at the roundtable. And also Tom Rhodes in his new role as head of water environment protection for the county. And December 15th, we'll end the year with a discussion of the Syracuse Philharmonic. So again, make sure you're here for those 3 weeks before we take our long winter break. Today we have three panelists, and I'm so pleased we could get them all here today. Excuse me while I adjust my reading glasses here. Kate Allwater is the city's public art coordinator. I think the city's had a public art commission since about 2007, but maybe Kate will tell us about that. She works with the Syracuse Public Art Commission to encourage and facilitate public art citywide, works closely with artists and organizations. She's also responsible for maintaining the public art inventory and is the primary contact for the city's art program. She has degrees from Oberlin College and Cornell University, and she's been a Syracusan for the last 13 years. Sharon Booman is a native Central New Yorker from the Oneida Lake area. She's a professional sculptor with degrees in graphic arts and a Bachelor of Fine Arts in sculpture. She works in traditional fine art sculpture as well as monuments, bronze monuments, architectural collaborations, and butter sculptures, which I thought was really interesting. And she's also really sought after for restoration of old public monuments. So that is Sharon Booman. And Brendan Rose is the city's first public artist in residence. Well-known. People know his sculpture, I think, outside of City Hall Commons, and he'll tell us about his new sculpture, I'm sure, on the Onondaga Creek Walk, which is really exciting. As I said, put Syracuse on the map. He completed his master's degree at SU School of Architecture, and he has a background in both architectural design and hands-on construction, so it makes him sort of unique in this on this panel. So I don't know who's going to start out, but please join me in welcoming today's panel.
I'm on, I can tell. Okay. This is a large topic that we decided to handle. We decided to break this into three separate questions that we're each going to answer from our own perspectives, our own experience. The three questions are, what is public art? Who is responsible for the creation of public art? And how does public art happen here? So Sharon drew the short straw, and we'll start with what is public art. So Sharon, what is public art?
Yeah. Well, I did a little research before I came today and discovered there are as many definitions of public art as there are authors. I found a few that I particularly liked what they had to say and went to some time-tested practitioners or artists and sort of agreed with them on how they felt about it. And art, by definition, in Africa, is the same word as good. And also, Rodin was quoted as saying, without art, religion, and science, a man is not complete. So my feeling for the definition of public art is that it should be for the edification and enjoyment of the masses. And I don't believe there's anyone that should be denied the opportunity to have art in their lives.
you have a slide?
I did have a slide for public art, but we can... Or you don't need to speak to the slides. Not when I'm speaking to public art.
Yeah.
I guess the question that I think that it's really nice to talk about these varying definitions of public art, and I think that's a really critical thing about public art, is it's really about dialogue and different perspectives. You know, the notion of what is public really changes from every individual has a different sense of what's public, and so I think only in these forums where we're discussing it can we really come to some sense of agreement around what our perception of public art is. So when we were talking about this before this conversation, you know, questions about if art is on a college campus, the sculptures that are on the SU quad, I think a lot of people would take for granted that that is a piece of public artwork. But there's also a lot of people in the city that don't feel comfortable on the SU quad. They don't feel like it's a space that they get to inhabit. And technically, it's private property. So I think it's really important when we talk about public art to think about who perceives the spaces that the art is in as public. And you can see the same thing about the museums in the city. These are spaces that anyone is welcome to go and experience the art, but do they actually perceive it as a space that's welcoming to them? So that's kind of, I think, a really important thing to think about relative to public art.
And speaking from the municipality's view, you can be assured that the lawyers have a very particular definition for what public art is. And so I will start there with a slide, hopefully.
Hopefully.
Oh, you have to stay. Sorry about this. Okay. Well, so the city does have a very specific definition. And it is, and it would, if we, aha, there we go, here we come. So all forms of visual art that do not constitute a sign and are located within the city right-of-way on public land owned by the city of Syracuse or controlled by the city of Syracuse, and murals that are on private property, except for murals that are on one and two family dwellings. So basically, the as is codified in our ordinance, to break this down, it's all forms of visual art, and it does detail things like painting, sculpture, stained glass, landscapes, earthworks, those sorts of things that are on city-owned property, as well as the majority of murals come under the city's jurisdiction. Okay, but what does this actually mean for us, you know, on the street? What does this allow us to do? And we're okay. All right. So, how does this actually play out for us on the city streets? And of course, I'll start with the historic monuments that everyone will recognize. They're mostly in parks and places of prominence around the city. There should be more coming up. And oh, see, there are plenty of, historic monuments that we see throughout the city. And obviously downtown, if you can switch again, Arlene. We have, downtown, there is a great location for sort of more abstract and contemporary pieces that we find. Go ahead, if you can flip. Go ahead, yep. Recently, the Public Art Commission commissioned a number of pieces that went into the neighborhood, smaller pieces of artwork that are all in neighborhood settings. Go ahead. And then we have a really interesting new collection of murals that went up in the last couple of years. These are Stephen Powers' A Love Letter to Syracuse. That went up in 2010. They're actually a series of six murals that serve as a link between the Near West Side as well as downtown. Go ahead. Whoops. We skipped over Art Erie, which is one of my favorite newest installations downtown. We're back to what is public art. we are having technical difficulties this morning. So we have really a tremendous range of artwork that is both permanent, that is considered lasting installations, as well as work that is more temporary in nature. So you'll have, for example, those things that are only supposed to last for maybe a week or two, a month, a year. They can include smaller installations such as experiments in yarn bombing in Forman Park. We have, and I have images of that that will come up eventually. We have, some of the works that you'll see now with the Urban Video Project. There have been some tremendous and amazing installations, in particular at the Everson Museum of Art. If you keep going, we'll see. Oh, there's Art Urie. Yeah, I can do that later. Okay, this was an installation that was done by the task force, the Public Art Task Force, the 40 Below Public Art Task Force. And it represents, it's located actually on two blocks of Erie Boulevard, right downtown. The artwork represents where the Erie Canal used to travel downtown. And it is drawn or painted blue paint on the city street there that, it, as viewed from Google Earth, actually is a barcode that reads Art Erie, Syracuse. And it's one of the newest artworks that is really, it's temporary, this is a temporary piece, which I'm hoping will have a longer life, that we'll be able to expand it. But it's one of the pieces that's actually really helping to put our public art program onto the map. And here is, I was just talking about Bill Viola's piece here. This is a UVP Urban Video Project installation. Really big name artist that, again, with the help of the UVP, is doing wonders for getting our name out as a place of for public art in the city. So I think we should go on to the next slide, if we could. Oh, and that was Brendan's slide. So we'll keep going, if we could. We'll see what comes up next. And another one. Okay. This discussion all leads into really who is responsible for public art. We will each direct these. Try to answer this. I'll start with the municipality's responsibility. Excuse me. And so the government's role, of course, is to regulate public art, and that is public art that is on public property and murals, as I described. But it's also there to encourage and foster an exciting public art program. Of course, this is very self-serving for the city, for the municipality, because we want a resurgent and vital city, and a characteristic of a resurgent city is having a really engaging cultural and physical environment that attracts people to stay, to want to come and visit, to want to invest in, hopefully to set up shop and come and live here. A lot of public art programs are municipally driven. We do have a relatively recent program. Sandra was correct. The public art ordinance was passed in 2007, and that did a number of things. One thing is it created the Syracuse Public Art Commission. It is an 11-member commission that is appointed by the mayor and common council. It's made up of artists, an art administrator, TNT members, and four non-artists. The commission is responsible for reviewing and approving public art applications, overseeing the city's acquisition of public art, and it's responsible also for the public art master plan. The meetings are open to the public. It's the second Tuesday of every month, room 215 of City Hall, and I really do encourage all of you to come, 5:30 in the evening. Really, I encourage you all to come and witness the commission in action. The public art ordinance also created the public art coordinator position. That's me. I am appointed by the mayor. I am a city staff member. My role is really to help facilitate and help the artists to present, pull together the best applications they possibly can for the Public Art Commission, and really just try to facilitate building our program here in the city. The ordinance created a public art application as well as process for the application. And it also set up a framework for the public art review criteria that the commission uses. And I do have a slide up there. Somewhere in here there's a slide. But I'll just run through those criteria because I think that you'll be interested to know what the Public Art Commission is looking at. It's a list of seven criteria, and I'll just run through them quickly. It's artistic merit and quality, intentionality of the artist, local significance, what is the relevance of this piece to us here in the city, the representation of styles and tastes within the public art collection, how does this new piece fit in, safety and durability, unrestricted public viewing, and then some real sort of logistics in terms of installation and maintenance of the work. Each of these criteria are judged and weighted very differently depending on what the application is. Is it a temporary or a permanent piece? Where is it located? Is it located downtown? Is it located in a neighborhood? Is it in a LIPE art park? All of these things the commission must weigh in terms of looking at the criteria and looking at the piece of artwork. But finally, the commission's obligation really is to assure that not only that the artwork is safe and doesn't present any hazards, but that it actually adds something to and enriches a space or a site, that it's adding to our discourse, as you know, Brendan was talking about, and that it's adding value to our program. So with that, I think I'll hand it on over to the role of the artist, or the community comes next. Yeah.
Did we get there?
Well, let me speak a little bit about the role of the community. So public art, the public art process is much less than half actually making artwork. And I think it's important for artists working in the public to understand that, but also that means that it's really accessible for the entire community to get involved in the process of public art. The idea of finding places for art in our communities, anyone can be a part of that and part of thinking about that. And what's going to inspire the artwork that happens in a place? The motivations for making public art pieces are so various and so many, and they oftentimes do not come from artists themselves. And I think that myself and Sharon explicitly don't self-motivate around art, but try to draw the motivation of the art out of the communities that we're working in. So it's really the role of the community to inspire the artwork that's going to happen in the communities. And organizing people to participate in the public art process is a really important thing of making art public, is as many people getting involved as possible. And that's something that artists are really typically not very well trained at doing. There's usually people in the community that have a lot more resource around organizing people to get involved in things than artists do. So that's really important that people in the community see that as their responsibility and understand that that is part of making art. That actually makes them, in some ways, the artists within the community as organizers. And then once art is existing in the community, people need to be keeping their eye on the art, maintaining the art, taking care of it, having a sense of stewardship over that art, which, you know, if an artist had to kind of take care of every piece of art that they ever put in the public, they'd probably at some point not be able to do art anymore. They would just be maintaining their art. So again, that's another role and responsibility of the community within the realm of public art. And just the general administration of it. You know, as we just heard from Kate, the amount of things that need to be considered, paperwork, all the time and energy doing that, supporting the artists and helping figure out how to navigate the city and all of the processes they're going to navigate. These are the roles of the community within a public art project. And now I think we're going to talk a little bit about the role of the artists. So
these are some of my more temporary or ephemeral pieces of work that I do. These are butter sculptures that are life-size, and they last only 10 days. In the process of creating them, you spend over hundreds of hours in their creation, and they're viewed by millions of people, literally. This is a piece from New York, and one of the things that you have to be ever conscious in any type of art is the structural design and the integrity of the engineering so it will stand up, stay together, and be safe. This is a piece that was a bit of a collaborative. Next. There's a lot of research that goes into doing any piece of art. You need to have a feeling for the site, you need to have a feeling for the subject matter, you need to have a feeling for the community for which it occupies. This is a piece that is up at Alexandria Bay, and the reason I selected this is it's a piece that was driven by the scale model. The scale model was created in multiples, and it was used as a fundraising tool to help fund the piece. This is a piece that is in a cemetery, but it's also at a church. It's a limited edition monument, which brings about the point of copyright. The copyright on any piece of artwork remains with the artist unless the copyright is purchased. That's one item that most people commissioning a work of art do not understand. The artist must be willing in creating a work of art to be able to talk to the public, as we're doing today. They may have to talk about the piece itself. The piece has to be designed to speak on its own behalf as well. This is a piece that I can try. This piece is very familiar, I'm sure, to all of you. It's the Jerry Rescue Monument, and it's one of the pieces that I'm best known for. This particular piece is concrete, bronze, and brick. It's designed with a lot of symbolism within, but in the process of designing and creating the proposal for this, it was important to think of safety first. It's very close to the road, so you don't want to have any loose parts that could be tossed at cars. You don't want anyone getting injured. It's a very traveled site. I spent a lot of time down at this site before we even put the proposal together just to see what type of traffic was involved there. This is a collaborative effort. These are parts that you will see at the War Memorial, the concrete pillars. There's also a concrete wall that is of the same design. This particular piece was a collaboration of architects, engineers, fabricators, and artists, and is very important for the teamwork of an artist. This is a piece that I've been working on as of late, and I would like to take you through a little bit of the steps and stages that a piece has to go through in order to come to its final form. There are multiple stages, and this is the clay form. Getting to this portion of this piece is approximately a year in its creation, and it goes through a phase, what I lovingly call the ugly stage. This is a statue of Dr. Mary Walker. She is the only woman to ever win a Congressional Medal of Honor in our American history. She was a physician during the Civil War. I have her illustrated standing at the podium because she was also an advocate for women's rights. She was an advocate for women's dress reform. She wrote several books, and she lectured all over the world on her beliefs. This is a mold stage, and quite often, once you've done the loving aspect of creating and designing the piece, a lot of things become very technical. And an artist is responsible for knowing how these technical stages work if they don't even know, if they don't do it themselves. I personally like doing it myself because I sort of feel I'm a bit of a Renaissance person. But this is a molding stage. We use a flexible mold material first, and then we use a harder shell mold called a mother mold on the outside. And those are opened up together, and the shell mold holds the form of the rubber mold so that you can cast back into it and have the same exact reproduction of what you had in clay. These are some of the steps and stages that the bronze goes through. Once the pieces are cast, they have to be welded and fabricated together. This project, we felt the podium was going to be the very easiest part. It has ended up being the most difficult part of the project. Flat surfaces do not like the shell material that they're cast from. They do not like being cast in large pieces. So once I went through all of the rigors of doing a very detailed solid mold, the fabricator, the foundry that did the casting, cut it into millions of pieces and then had to put it back together. This is the site preparation. This is the stone that the piece will finally be housed on. She's going to be located at the front of the town hall in the town of Oswego, where Dr. Mary Walker was born.
All right, I'll try to quickly speak to the process that I've been going through. I guess these are just going to scroll through here around this first project for the Public Artist in Residence. The Public Artist in Residence was something that was an idea that came out of a couple from some community organizers as a way of instigating more public art in the city of Syracuse. We identified, using the connective corridor and the money from the Empire State Development Corporation for the connective corridor and arts along that as a way to kind of bolster this notion that Syracuse as a city should have a public artist in residence. So there's a few partners on the project, clearly the university, the downtown committee, the city of Syracuse, 40 Below. These are all kind of organizations that have gotten together and decided to support this idea. A proposal was put forth from myself to do two installations within a pilot year of the program. And so the first project was identified as something that we should work with an industrial design class and developing. They're being housed down at the SU warehouse downtown right now. Seemed like a good opportunity to get students involved in being out and working in the city. And so I had a team of 9 students. We spent some time walking around the city of Syracuse trying to look at places where there was maybe a little bit of a vacuum of art. One of the places we identified was the Creek Walk, and it seemed like a really exciting opportunity to set a precedence for the Creek Walk as being a location for art. And I think that the public response for having that piece down there now has been really, really positive. I mean, it's really kind of been exciting working down there and seeing how responsive people are to that. So once we identified the site, we actually had an open community meeting to ask people what they thought of that location, the history of that location, what the creek meant in the city. And we had a really nice dialogue with people, had some worksheets that they could fill out so we could take home the information and really study it, and then use that to inspire the piece. And some of the things that came out of there were this idea of renewal, a place that at one point was a great resource to the area that then had been destroyed, and now we were trying to bring it back as a resource. So then there was a number of other things, but you know, so you have these conversations, you take hold of an idea of it like that, and then try to pair it with an idea about art, which is oftentimes a very kind of whimsical and chaotic process. The final design of this large serpent for the site wasn't something that kind of came logically through a process of, well, this is what makes sense. But when the kids were playing around with ideas, it was an idea that came out, and we were like, well, maybe this can be paired with the idea that this site could have a kind of a keeper, a some symbolic creature that can be there and remind us of our important connection to the creek. And so it kind of happens a little haphazardly, which is fun, but it's not that then it's meaningless. It's finding within that chaos some connection of meaning between something that can be fun and interesting and beautiful, and if people don't know the meaning, they're still going to connect to it, but also has a deeper reading to it. And then we also had another community forum, opened it up for feedback on that, and we were still like kind of deciding where to place the thing. So part of the conversation is, how does this thing best sit on the site? Should it be down by the water? Should it be up by the walkway? And then after that feedback, kind of coming to a final conclusion, moving it through the Public Arts Commission, which was a fun ride, and then moving into fabrication, and this project ended up being pretty massive in scope. Took about 8 months to build. We did it in sections, and we were kind of out on the site a lot, which I really enjoyed that part of the public art process, is trying to kind of almost make the making of the art an activity in itself, almost kind of an event. It's kind of a performance piece. You're out there building. People are coming by and talking to you, asking you what you're doing. So that's been the process around that. We've got another. I still have a commission for one more piece within this context of this. Public artists in residence. That's probably not going to get installed until the spring at this point. Looking to even kind of up the ante for myself around how I engage and participate with the public around the piece, and trying to get the public as much involved in the piece. I can't really speak a whole lot to it because it's really in a testing phase. Mostly I want it to be something that builds connections between people. So that's kind of speaking of my public art process a little.
And I'm thinking, so that we have time for questions, why don't we just switch right to the end, the last slide, which will be... I wanted to talk quickly about Ann Kofer's piece, but I'm not going to. There was a nice article in the paper about it not too long ago. But just to summarize, Sharon pulled these bullets together. I think that it's helpful that, you know, all public art projects need a strong concept, a venue, a real champion. I have to say that the pieces that I have worked with, public art projects come to me, the public art coordinator, at a point where usually there is a person or a group that is really truly championing the project. At that point, I can step in and help sort of navigate the city process, getting approvals and working through the application process. But having that strong leadership within that project or that work of art is really helpful. So someone that I can work with and have as a point person. Permission, of course. funding and fundraising and fundraisers. The final one, a team. A willing artist, an active community, and a supportive municipality. And I think that pretty much sums it up. So I think we have time for questions.
Thank you. Okay. We have a question right here.
Is there the graffiti artists in our community? Seem to be everywhere at different times. Is there any attempt to somehow bring them into this work of art in the community and help and structure and direct, generally, I assume, younger people with some graffiti skills?
Well,
Well, actually, I think Brendan and I both can talk a little bit about this, but I'll start from the city side that we are actually working with a group of graffiti artists who started an impromptu graffiti wall on the Near West Side. And I think that the city's position, public art commission's position, is that we would like to be in a situation where we can allow this to happen, but in a way that is clear and it's intentional, that the neighbors understand what's going on, that this is a graffiti wall, that this is not just tagging, that it is an art form in itself. So we're working out sort of the parameters of what that will mean, a graffiti wall here in the city. And we actually have, and working with graffiti artists are interesting. You really, it would be very difficult to get them to come through the public art process, the formal, because that's not the way that they work. However, there needs to be respect for neighbors, for the community, and where the public, where this form, art form goes. And I can let Brendan talk about the Light Bar Shark and the graffiti wall that you set up in Light Bar Park.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's definitely an interest in trying to create safe venues for that to happen in. And my thesis work, I did an installation out of Light Bar Park that's a wall and a shade canopy, and the intention was for that wall to be one of these venues where graffiti artists can have a place to work and have it be sanctioned, I guess, in a way. And it's tricky because I think part of the motivation is operating unsanctioned. So it's a hard conversation, but certainly I think it is important to be creating those venues.
There's when you're coming from 81 going south, you can get off at West Street, Franklin Street. There's a big side of essentially, I guess it's 690 from the Macney Building all the way down to the underpass where you can go to the dinosaur barbecue. Humongous canvas. Have you guys ever looked at that?
Let's see. Going down to bullet number four, was it for permission? we are hoping to start that conversation, and certainly Paul Mercurio, who works for the DPW and is our transportation planner, and who also in his own right is an artist, is starting initial dialogue with the highway department about our underpasses, and this is something absolutely we would love to see happen, because again, art has a way of creating inviting spaces. We want people to be able to walk from one side of town to the other, and we do have a number of viaducts, large concrete walls that create barriers, and in the same way that the Steve Powers murals on those West Street bridges, railroad bridges, have created they've created portals to downtown, to the Near West Side. Instead of, it's really been very effective at breaking down those barriers. I think that it's the same with these underpasses and the large concrete walls that we can do tremendous things with. So yes, in the answer, we'd really love to see something happen there.
I have a question about funding. Assume that your expenses are covered in the city budget, but through the grant process, do you get any state or federal funding through grants for some of the work?
My salary comes through the municipal budget. And the majority of artworks that you have seen up today have been funded through grants or other fundraising, but it's not actually the fundraising that the city itself has done, the public commission has done. We did a lot of these projects are coming as packages to the Public Art Commission. The city would like to be in a position to be commissioning works. We did have those small six pieces that we commissioned. There was some funding that was given through the general budget to the Public Art Commission for the commission of some public art pieces. So we came up with this community-based public art project, and were able to install six pieces in six different neighborhoods with the help, partnering with TNT, with each of the those six TNT areas. But so far, we have not been as aggressive as we should be with seeking out grants and funding for, so that the city can actually be commissioning those public works. But that is all part of what is coming in, rolling into our public art master plan that we are in the midst of creating. So coming up with a funding structure for more artwork.
Interject that prior to Kate's employment with the city, years ago, there was funding that came through the state of New York. And there are two projects that I worked on with grants. So it is possible, and they have been working with the city. But again, there even needs to be a champion within the municipality to take the time to make those efforts to write the grants.
Yes.
And now that would be Kate.
Yes. Yeah, that would be good.
I actually have a different question, but just to add what you were saying to this, many of the cities with great art and beautiful, welcoming art have a percentage of construction funds, 0.1%, is always dedicated to art. So when a new building goes up, there is a portion of the construction funds that are set aside. Thank you. The city could use that in order to have this vital, alive kind of welcoming art. And that was basically one of my questions. You have all kinds of criteria, which are all valid, safety, community. Do you have criteria for the aesthetics when a work goes in? Because art is so subjective. Communities get, it gets difficult. Picasso's work raised tremendous amount of anger, and now it has become an icon. How does your aesthetic process work?
The Art Commission, as I said, is made up of 11 members of the community, all city residents, and we are working into the top criteria that they're looking at is that artistic excellence. And of course it is very subjective, as you're saying, and I think that that's why we have 11 members on the commission rather than just one or two, or that it's the mayor, for example, who's making these decisions, although I'm sure her aesthetic decisions would be excellent, as I say this to my boss, right? Yeah, yeah. However, you're right, there is a tremendous amount of discourse at our commission meetings over the aesthetic piece and how is this, again, adding to our understanding of our community, and where is this going to be located, and does it make, and is this aesthetically the appropriate piece, you know, in front of a school or, you know, it just all of these questions come into it. And again, I think that there is an attempt at those commission meetings to come to consensus. And I know, Brendan, you've been through the process. I don't know if you have other comments that you want to make about the about that aesthetic.
I guess I would say that one of the things that the Public Arts Commission seems to do pretty effectively is rely on the community involvement piece, yeah, so that you're much more likely to go through a smooth process with the Public Arts Commission if you have been working with a community that's already, that the community's bought into it. They believe in it. They find it. They are attracted to the piece. We'll kind of strip a little bit of them. Do we have to have this debate within the city hall setting, because it's very subjective, and a lot of times you have to kind of say, well, we agree to disagree about whether we like this piece or not, but we can all agree that the community that's been participated in making this happen believes in this piece.
And again, I come back to the works that are coming through the Public Art Commission are going on public property as well. So the works of art that are perhaps created for private, you know, there are as private works of art are going to be very different than what is presented out in the public. So I echo what Brendan was saying, that the community involvement is key, absolutely essential to the decision making.
What about that crumbling train station platform along 690 with those plastic or plaster figures? Do you consider that public art? I consider it a terrible eyesore, seen by so many people traveling along 690. How do you see it?
As you see by the reaction, in that there are many different points of view. I think that there was certainly an outcry when the plaster, those figures, waiting for the night train, I believe is what it's called, was they were removed to be refurbished, and there were letters in the paper, and there was a great deal of angst about where those artworks had disappeared to, and some celebration when they came back. And so again, that artwork is actually on private property, and would not come before the Public Art Commission. I think, though, that in general, people there is an acceptance of those pieces, and people really do enjoy them.
Any chance for this program to be expanded into the county, particularly maybe the first ring or two of towns around the city?
I would love to see that happen. I'm focusing on the municipal program, but I know that the county has some interest in public art. I don't know if either of you have been approached by people on the outside of the city. But yes, I think it would be excellent to be able to expand this program.
Probably if you look to individual towns as opposed to a county program, I'm guessing it would be a town or a village. I'm not conversant with it, but I do know, for instance, in Auburn, there have been some public art projects having to do with murals and ceramics and things like that. And I'm sure that there are other examples in towns around the county.
Since public support is a really important part of this whole thing, community effort, has there been any thought given to having, either through the Arts Commission, kind of tours or some kind of Celebrate Our Arts Day, and offer the opportunity for people in the community who may really be ignorant about what's going on to be taken, you know, around and shown, like a little tour, of what actually now exists in our city? And I think it could really garner a tremendous amount of support, you know, whether it's church groups or you know, community groups of whatever kind, to get out and really see what's happening.
Well, I think that one of the exciting things that's happening now, and again, our program itself, the formal program in the city, is still quite young, but there has been a real uptick in the amount of interest and just the sheer number of installations that have occurred, both temporary as well as permanent pieces. So I really feel that the city is now in a position where it can show off its public art collection. We have some amazing things going on. So absolutely, tours, brochures. We have to ramp up our website, because that obviously is the place where most people will first come. They're shopping around, figuring out what to do. There are some excellent sites that we hope to copy in terms of being able to create some self-guided tours and brochures. But communicating what we've got is an essential component. Yeah.
Well, I think there's an interesting. It also brings us back to that question of responsibility, and I think that's one of those things that we shouldn't wait for the city to figure out. And I'm certainly in conversations with other people in the community interested in, well, how do we communicate what's there? And partly also a documentation of things. I mean, there's artwork that's disappearing too in this city that we want to be either preserving or at least archiving so that we know what we've lost. And to a certain degree, I think we have to assume that nobody's going to do it except for us. So if we want to have art tours, let's organize them and not that we don't want the city to also be supporting that effort, but they only have so much resource.
There are a few private individuals that have gone ahead and started programs, bus tours that come and do certain site visitations in Syracuse. And I'm not exactly sure how you key into that, but there is an interest from a private standpoint to make that happen.
Speaking of resources, what has been or will be the role of corporations in supporting public art?
I think that given the economic challenges that we are all facing now, and certainly that the city is facing and will be over the next number of years, I would say that the key to our successful public art program will be partnerships, and partnerships with corporations, with individuals, with foundations, to be able to really make this work and really send us on a good trajectory. My experience so far has been that there have been I've been public art coordinator. That is that that corporate sponsorship has. I've not actually seen any corporate sponsorship. I know that there's some discussion about how we move forward with, for example, the SPAR program, the Public Artists in Residence, and looking for corporate support to help continue that position and bring in new artists once Brendan's term is over. But I think that partnering with corporations, foundations, individuals is going to be really essential.
Well, thank you, Kate Allwater, Sharon Booman, and Brendan Rose.